In my mind, I'm gone to Carolina. Can't you see the sunshine? Can't you just feel the moonshine? Ain't it just like a friend of mine to hit me from behind? Guess I'm gone to Carolina in my mind.
Welcome back to the Up North Podcast. We all remember January 6, 2021, but a lot of folks who are, you know, living their lives don't know the exact date when U.S. politics was forever changed by one of the worst U.S. Supreme Court decisions of our time.
And of course, we're talking about the Citizens United case, the case where the conservative justices opened the floodgates for dirty money to corrupt our campaigns, and has it ever. That decision was handed down January 21st of 2010. Believe me, I remember it well. It was directly contributed to the Tea Party wave that year that took me out of the legislature and continues to plague our country to this point. But it was also on that day that the group Free Speech for the People was formed. The group continues to fight to restrict big money in politics, but also launches innovative, even groundbreaking legal actions to ensure that people can participate equally in our democracy and defend its core principles. And there's just nothing more core about defending democracy than taking the fight to those who would sell out our founding fathers, trash our elections, and embrace authoritarian leaders. So, Kirk, that's where you come in with a lawsuit you've been a part of, not unlike what Free Speech for the People has done with our guest, John Boniface. So, Kirk, why don't you tell us a bit more?
So we're going to introduce John Boniface in a second, but the reason I found this erudite and wickedly smart gentleman was because he filed, or his group filed, the first 14th Amendment disqualification lawsuit against Madison Cawthorn in North Carolina. That's why we played, if anybody was listening, Carolina on My Mind by the famous James Taylor. We'll play Georgia on My Mind very soon in the next segment for other reasons. But so when I saw that that lawsuit, I was like, I called a few lawyers in Wisconsin and I said, guys, like, if there's anybody that's about as seditionist, insurrectionist, you know, in America, it's a couple of our congressmen and states and our U.S. Senator Ron Johnson. I was like, can we do this? And like, there was about three groups that said, nope. There was a couple other ones that said, that's a long shot. We don't want to take it on. We don't want to irritate our conservative businesses that we have to be lawyers for. But I found a great law firm that actually are corporate trial attorneys who actually have irritated some of their more conservative clients, but were willing to do it for the sake of Wisconsin and our democracy. And so the reason I'm leading up to this is that we have the guy that started this whole movement on the show tonight, and his name is John Boniface. So John, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Kirk. Thank you for having me. Good to be with you, Pat and Sarah.
So just the first question, you know, we'll get to the Madison Cawthorn, we'll get to Marjorie Taylor Greene. Why did you start your organization, and what led you to kind of think up this idea of using the 14th Amendment to remove some of our kind of insurrectionist congresspeople from office?
Yes. Well, as Pat said in that generous introduction about Free Speech for People, we were launched on the day of the Citizens United ruling, and we've been involved in multiple fights across the country for more than a decade to defend our democracy and our Constitution. And as Sarah highlighted at the outset, we're dealing here with an insurrection that occurred January 6, 2021, and an existential crisis for our democracy. And Section 3 of the 14th Amendment makes clear that if you have taken an oath of office to defend the Constitution, and then you engage in insurrection or give aid or comfort to it, you are forever barred from holding future public office again. So we looked at that critical constitutional provision, and we decided it was necessary to launch a campaign, which we call 14.3 campaign, to deal with the reality that there are people across the country who have taken an oath of office to defend the Constitution and participated in the January 6th insurrection and are now seeking to go back into power or retain power. And this is precisely what the framers of the 14th Amendment sought to prevent. They were focused at that time on ex-Confederates after the Civil War who were in positions of government power or attaining positions of government power. And they put this into the 14th Amendment to ensure that people who had taken that oath of office and engaged in that first insurrection in our nation's history, the Civil War, would be barred from holding future public office again. We're now dealing with the second insurrection in our nation's history, January 6, 2021. And there are people, including Madison Cawthorn, who need to be barred from appearing on the ballot again because of the role they played in the insurrection.
So, combination of looking at this as a spectrum kid and a former district attorney or deputy district attorney, where the cases I brought were with the good faith belief that I could prove the case beyond a reasonable doubt at trial, this seems so straightforward. So one of the reoccurring questions is, well, do you think you have a chance? And it seems like such a simple question to me. And so my question to you is, why do we have this mental block? You know, if looking at the facts and applying them to the law, this seems like a very straightforward issue. Why the controversy or this mental block that we could, you know, not be successful? I would expect us to be if we're following the letter of the law and looking at the facts. And my dog agrees.
Yeah, no, and I agree. I fully agree. I mean, the reality here is that we did have an insurrection on January 6th that was not only stated by Mitch McConnell himself and by Trump's impeachment counsel at that second impeachment trial, but it's been stated by federal judges. It was stated by the House of Representatives in their impeachment charges. It's been recognized by constitutional scholars all across the country. This was an insurrection. And then the question comes, if you took that oath of office and engaged in it, you were barred from public office again. And Section 3 of the 14th Amendment doesn't require a criminal conviction beforehand, doesn't require a court tribunal beforehand. It's very clear and straightforward that it's about the threat to the Republic that you present as someone who took that oath and then engaged in an insurrection, not being able to be in position of government power again. And that's why we think it's critical that state election officials all across the country follow the mandate of Section 3 and bar from the ballot people in their state, including Donald Trump, if he runs again, from appearing on the ballot. But it also means that voters have the right in certain states, including in North Carolina, to bring challenges to candidates who are disqualified. And that's what we're doing in North Carolina with respect to Madison Cawthorn.
And yet, for as straightforward as it seems to be for a lot of folks, a judge disagreed in the first attempt at this. We've talked about this on the show before, but it was several weeks ago. And so, John, you want to review just the legal play-by-play of what a judge ruled, and then that's going to get us into an op-ed in the Chicago Tribune that our own Kirk Bankstead was a part of talking about. But let's set the pieces up and tell us what happened in court at first.
Yes. So we filed the challenge before the North Carolina State Board of Elections against Madison Cawthorn on behalf of a courageous group of voters in his district. And then he rushed to federal court to try to block this challenge from being heard. And the case got assigned to Judge Richard Myers in the Eastern District of North Carolina, who happens to be a Trump appointee. And the Cawthorn attorneys argued a number of things. One, they argued the entire state statute that's been around for years that allows for these voter challenges ought to be invalidated on due process and First Amendment grounds. They also argued that Congress and only Congress has the power to determine who gets seated, ignoring the reality that if you, you know, don't have state officers enforce the constitutional qualifications, that would mean that a 10-year-old could get on the ballot, could win an election, and it's Congress's role only to decide whether that 10-year-old doesn't get seated. Or to put it more starkly, Vladimir Putin could decide to run for Congress and get on the ballot without the state having any authority whatsoever to remove him. So that clearly can't be true, but that's not, the judge didn't buy any of those arguments, at least didn't rule on them. What he ruled on was the last argument they made, was that the Amnesty Act of 1872, which provided amnesty to ex-Confederates after the 14th Amendment, there was an ability to provide that amnesty to bring the country together, was the view on behalf of President Ulysses Grant and the Congress at that time. And so to no longer have the Section 3 of the 14th Amendment enforced against those Confederates, that Amnesty Act also provided amnesty for all future insurrectionists, including Madison Cawthorn, that 150 years later, what they meant to do in 1872 was effectively nullify Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, which you can't do without another constitutional amendment. And it's completely absurd. And it's on appeal. We're appealing it to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit. The Constitutional Accountability Center has weighed in with an amicus brief. Lawrence Tribe, a Harvard law professor, preeminent constitutional law scholar, has weighed in. And we believe it needs to be reversed. There's no basis whatsoever that the Amnesty Act of 1872 protects Madison Cawthorn.
Okay, so let me pivot just slightly because it's exactly along the lines of what you're saying. After this case was filed and after that, I'll just say the Trump lawyer, I can't remember his name, but in the Carolina,
Bopp. Huh? James Bopp.
James Buck in North Carolina.
Oh, Cawthorn attorney.
The Cawthorn case, the Trump judge, there was that kind of led a fellow by the name of Hans von Spakovsky from the Heritage Foundation to write an op-ed that was published in the Chicago Tribune last week that said, your case against Cawthorn, your case against Marjorie Taylor Greene, which we will introduce in the next segment, but there's another case that these guys are have against Marjorie Taylor Greene, and our case, as long as the case in New Mexico, which is also, it's a little different case, it's with a county executive using the disqualification clause, are all baseless for the same reason that judge came up with, that said that, the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution has been nullified by an act of Congress, which you just can't do. So we wrote, it's kind of amazing because this is in Wisconsin. We found that the 14th Amendment and the disqualification clause was actually used against a socialist congressman from Milwaukee in 1918. From Milwaukee, we had these sewer socialists that were all for good government, but he was against World War I, probably because he was German, and he didn't want the U.S. to get into World War I, and they removed him using the disqualification clause way after the amnesty laws in the late 1800s. They removed him in 1918. So that's a direct usage of this.
Right.
Law of this. So it's what talk about that a little bit, because it completely nullifies this argument.
It does. And you know, there's no question that's a precedent. But so, too, is the legislative history and the text of the Amnesty Act and of the amendment language itself, the Section 3. So I think all this combined shows that Judge Myers made a clear error with the law here. And that's why we're appealing it. But I will say that, not only will Judge Myers not have the last word, the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals is going to review this, but there's now a separate case that has been filed in federal court, this time in our Georgia case against Marjorie Taylor Greene. And Judge Amy Totenberg is holding a hearing there on Friday in Atlanta on those same arguments. And the same attorney, James Bopp, on behalf of Cawthorn, is making those arguments on behalf of Greene. So, it's just inaccurate to say that this one Trump district court judge is going to stop these proceedings. He's not. This is going to go forward in other states, including, as you highlight, in Wisconsin. The ruling is just wrong and will be reversed, in my view.
Well, and it seems like very powerful messaging potential here. The slippery slope of allowing an act of Congress to nullify or act as an amendment to the Constitution. I mean, just take the Second Amendment. We're a big Second Amendment state. And if you get a liberal Congress who comes in and says, okay, no more guns, what they've been selling people for years, the Republicans would lose their mind. So do the Republicans really want to go down this path where this is the precedent?
Well, exactly. But also, I mean, frankly, you look at the history of Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. They debated making it solely to apply to the Confederates. They actually had that debate in Congress when they decided whether or not to pass the 14th Amendment. And they decided, no, we're not going to have it apply solely to the Confederates. We're going to have it apply to future insurrections. 4 years later, that same Congress passed the Amnesty Act of 1872. So it makes absolutely no sense to think that what they intended to do was to wipe out Section 3 of the 14th Amendment when they had just had that debate 4 years earlier that it wouldn't solely apply to Confederates.
So do you want me to read the quote by Senator Waitman Willie of West Virginia when they intended, this is when they were debating the 14th Amendment of the Constitution, this old, you know, this 100-some-year-old senator said, Waitman Willie of West Virginia said, Section 3, as a permanent provision of the Constitution, is intended to operate as a preventative of treason hereafter by holding out to the people of the United States that such will be the penalty of the offense if they dare commit it. Hereafter, it's not just because of the Confederate.
Well, so let me ask this basic question then. So we've gone on at some length here about this judge appointed by Trump who made this terrible decision that seems wrong on its face. So why hasn't it been slapped down at this point by some higher level?
Well, so the reality here, again, is that this judge on March 4th issued this ruling knowing the ballots were about to get printed. And after he issued it, we rushed to the appeals court to try to have it reversed right away. They said, first, you need to make sure your intervention motion gets reheard before Judge Myers. And they said, we want Judge Myers to do it on an expedited basis. So we went right back to Judge Myers hours after that ruling with a refile motion to intervene. He sat on it for 2 weeks. He sat on it.
Okay.
Finally ruled. So he's dragged his feet. And now we're back finally after he denied the motion to intervene a second time. So that's why we're not yet getting a ruling from the Fourth Circuit. But they could now rule any day at this point.
There you go. Okay. Sounds good. We're going to take a break right here. When we come back, more from John Boniface from Free Speech for the People. You're up north.